Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Taking a look back at the draft, it's Will Polacek and Thomas Mott
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
High noon on a Sunday. Willie P, Thomas Mott here with you. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, and always on the radio.com app. Our NFL draft coverage is brought to you by Twin Peaks, your home for the 2020 NFL season. Have you gotten inside the kitchen laboratory at all with the social distancing and the homebound nature of the coronavirus pandemic? Tommy Tom?
You know, so I was actually one of the unfortunate people to have my birthday in April, which meant I didn't get to see like anybody for my birthday. But my mom, who's listening right now, got me one of those butcher box subscriptions where they like send you a full box of like really nice cuts of meat. It has like chicken, and I had salmon, like fresh salmon and stuff. I'm trying it for the first time this evening because it came just a couple of days ago. So I have been, although I do follow you on Twitter at Willie P Style, and you post a lot of the meals that you make. And let me tell you, they look really good.
First off, when you talk about your birthday, it was my birthday before.
I didn't even realize that until that day because people were wishing you happy birthday too. I was like, wait a second, this is my day.
It was mine first.
Wait, what time were you born on April 6th?
It was 7 in the morning.
Oh, see, I was like 2:30 in the morning. So technically mine first, although you came like, you know, years before me, right?
I had like 10 years on it. That's the point.
Still, the fact that we've hosted shows together and been in the same room like dozens of times whenever you and I both got hired here and did not realize our birthdays were on the same day is kind of sad.
I was rather annoyed.
Yeah, well,
not gonna lie to you.
It happened.
I was butcher. So you got salmon. What else did you get in that?
I got salmon. I got chicken, and I have a bunch of different cuts of steak in the box as well. And apparently, my subscription came with 4 pounds of lean ground beef free on the side. So okay. I'm pumped though. It's all frozen. There's a ton of it. My freezer is completely packed. But I'm pumped to try the first bit of meat tonight. Salmon first. I'll update you guys how it goes.
You have to be wary about salmon. Don't overcook it.
Yeah, that's important. There you go. Cooking with Will Polacek, little Gordon Ramsay over here, huh?
You can't overcook the seafood. That's the one big thing. Or else it'll come out all rubbery and spongy. And yeah, I'm gonna try and reverse sear one of those ribeyes that I got from the fine folks at Revere Meat again tonight. You remember the one I put out on Easter?
Yeah, that thing
one
was that came huge.
That's another one of the same type of cut for tonight. So a little reverse sear, 45-50 minutes on 225. Inside that oven, and then a little cast iron sear for about 2 minutes, 15 seconds, just to get that nice little malabsorption crust going there. That's how that rolls.
So I'm obviously a younger guy, so I still have like roommates and stuff at my age. I'm very curious because I love both of my roommates. Both of them are really like my best friends. We've been playing a ton of video games together and just hanging out. Can you imagine this whole coronavirus pandemic being stuck inside your apartment or house with roommates that you hate? I'm so lucky because I love my roommates, but I've been around them a ton the past couple of days because normally we're at work and I got late night shows and they work normal schedules. We've been together. I was thinking yesterday, what if I hated these guys? Like, I know that you don't have a roommate, but can you imagine being a guy out there, and I'm sure there are, who hates their roommate and now has to see them 24/7? It's got to be brutal.
The last guy that I lived with in college, I didn't like to begin with, but he was kind of in our circle of friends. I got basically boxed out of the place that I lived after my second year of college. And then he was kind of like the last one that didn't have a roommate. So it was kind of a situation where I was kind of SOL with that guy. I ended up living in with him for 2 years.
Jeez.
Only because it was just convenient.
Yeah.
But the fact remained, I hated living with that guy. Like, absolutely hated it.
Roommates are fun until you don't like them. And then they are the worst thing in the entire world because they're stuck with you.
If I had to live with that guy during the coronavirus pandemic, one of us wouldn't have gotten out of there alive, and it probably would have been him, because I'm probably more resourceful than he was.
Apparently, there are things happening right now. Zoom breakups are what's happening right now. They're calling them breakups right now. Isn't that what they're calling them, Dylan? It's something like that. There are Zoom virtual breakups happening right now where you can't go in person to break up with your girl, but apparently you do it over Zoom, which is very, very strange.
Incredibly strange. Well, Wake Forest basically Zoom broke up with Danny Manning yesterday.
Wait, really?
Yes.
Like over Zoom?
Well, not Zoom. I don't know if it was over Zoom, but they had a pandemic breakup with Wake Forest head coach Danny Manning, and they get to pay him $15 million on the way out. Like that's the one that yesterday where I was just like they announced that like early yesterday morning, and I'm thinking, well, what has happened over the last month and a half that's convinced you, oh my God, we're going to break up with Danny Manning? And basically it was a situation where they missed their window on being able to do that after the regular season, and so they felt like, oh, we'll stick with him for now, and then weigh the buyout. It's just a bad look for a place that hasn't had a lot of success in basketball over the last couple of years to go and dump $15 million in a buyout for that guy when we're in a situation where we're all trying to kind of conserve money and save people when it comes to this pandemic. Just a thankless and thoughtless decision out of them.
Final thing on Zoom, and then we'll get back to the Atlanta Falcons draft. I was on a Zoom call with like 100 employees at my other job, and one of them was asleep, like full laid back, mouth open. He slept through the entire Zoom call to the point that people had to call his wife to make sure that he did not die on Zoom. He looked like he had passed away. I'm like, okay, like head fully knocked back, mouth open, didn't move a muscle for the entire 30 minutes. We had to make sure the guy did not die on Zoom. It was like, it was the most coronavirus Zoom meeting via work. It was so weird. It was like, hello, sir, Mickey, are you awake, please? Please tell me you're here. Breathe, please. Breathe. It was weird.
15 minutes from right now, we're going to hear from the position coach of the Falcons' fourth round pick, Michael Walker. Memphis linebackers coach Burt Watts was with Walker when they were both at Fresno State. He's going to join us coming up on 92.9 The Game about 15 minutes from right now. We want to hear a little bit from both A.J. Terrell and Marlon Davidson in interviews that aired previously here on 92.9 The Game. A.J. joined Dukes and Bell on Friday, and Marlon Davidson talked to Andy and Randy yesterday. Here's A.J. on that highly panned performance against LSU, which I'm actually seeing played back right now on ESPN as they're looking at some of the stuff involving Ja'Marr Chase and A.J. Terrell. He said, though, that that's not indicative of where his game is at its strengths.
I didn't have my best game, but definitely still competed throughout the whole game. And, you know, just didn't feel satisfied with nothing that was, you know, given up or given to me. So I just kept on playing all the way through the fourth quarter. And we didn't win the game, but just definitely a growing experience, and it is definitely ready to bounce back and play another game, play my next game.
Yeah, and you know, we said this earlier in the program, Thomas. You know, it wasn't like, you know, C.J. Henderson didn't have his struggles with Ja'Marr Chase himself. Chase, in the game that LSU beat Florida 42-28, had seven catches, 127 yards, and Burrow threw for three touchdowns. So, I mean, this was a combo that was killing a lot of people when it came to the SEC and college football as a whole. So A.J. Terrell was definitely not alone from his fact that he was getting torched, like to use your term, but he was getting torched by both Burrow and Chase.
It's funny that everyone thinks that just because you're picked in the first round doesn't mean that you can't have flaws or you can't have bad film. We expect a first-round player to be like, oh, well, you know, we're getting J.J. Watt or we're going to go and get Richard Sherman. That's almost never how it works. These guys always come in with baggage. They always come in with plays or games or bad film. You can go to, like, any little mock draft website or draft prospect indicator website, and you can read, here's their best game, here's their worst game. And you can go to YouTube and look up their worst game, and then your mind creates this, oh, well, Ja'Marr Chase absolutely torched him, so how is he going to go ahead and defend Mike Evans? That makes no sense. The big thing about A.J. Terrell, and he actually mentions this, we're going to play that audio here in a second, is he now gets to go up against the best receiver in football in practice. This is something that the NFL, we don't even realize. He gets to now go against one-on-one Julio Jones and Matt Ryan every single day in practice. And if that's not enough to get him better, then I don't know what is. Here's what he had to say about playing with both of those guys. Oh, we got to hear him 1 second right now. The one with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, A.J. Terrell was mentioning that during his interview just the other day whenever he was picked, obviously, first overall, or 16th overall, I should say, first round of the Atlanta Falcons. But the idea of getting to play alongside a Julio Jones and a Matt Ryan will, and getting to go up against even Calvin Ridley, I think is going to benefit A.J. Terrell going forward.
I also think, too, that the biggest thing when it comes to NFL draft picks, it's not just what they have, it's the situation that they're in. Like, I don't want to sit here and just make this something where I diss the Cincinnati Bengals and their organization, but I still think that that organization is a long way away from competing and being relevant in a very tough AFC North. I think the same can be said for the Washington Redskins. So despite the fact that you might have good players there, and I think the players who have the least amount of questions around them in Joe Burrow and Chase Young, the reason that those teams are picking at the top of the draft is because there's dysfunction there. I mean, the Redskins basically have a brand-new front office, a brand-new head coach. They still are a long way away. And like I said earlier, I didn't like their draft outside of Chase Young at all. I still think that they're a long way away. I don't believe in the quarterback. And I still think, too, for Cincinnati, you have a lot of questions about what that head coach is going to be inside the NFL, because I don't think we really have a full real handle on what Zach Taylor can do as an NFL head coach, because basically his last year was an incomplete. And so when you spin that to the Falcons' perspective, I love the fact that he gets to learn under Raheem Morris and Joe Witt. I think you think about two guys who know how to utilize secondaries. You know that secondary played a lot better in the second half of the season once Raheem took the reins away from Dan Quinn. Being able to learn in that environment and under that scheme, I think it's going to have a huge impact on Terrell and his career.
Mentioned that audio earlier, getting to play opposite, up against one-on-one every single day against Julio Jones. Here was A.J. Terrell about what he can learn from old Julio.
It's going to be great. Definitely looking forward to the opportunity. I'm ready for it. You know, just coming in to compete. You know, just give them my best. And I know they're going to give me theirs. So, you know, just coming in, competing, not being satisfied. Just, like I said, gain my respect and just be great teammates and, you know, just go win games.
The other player that I think brings the most hope for the Atlanta Falcons going forward, you mentioned who might be the best Falcon out of this draft. For me, it's Marlon Davidson. And a perfect example of this is my father just texted me, right? And he basically said, okay, I like the draft picks, but what separates this Atlanta Falcon team from last year's Falcon team? What is going to be different? And my answer to that, and I think a lot of Falcon fans will agree with my dad's question, it's the pass rush. And that's what Marlon Davidson is going to bring on this defensive front. Not just Dante Fowler, who obviously we signed in the offseason, not just Grady Jarrett, but they still were able to go into this draft while addressing the secondary in round one, getting a defensive tackle slash defensive end, a kind of hybrid Gerald McCoy type guy who is going to be an addition on the front four. The big difference between this year's Atlanta Falcons to last year's Atlanta Falcons has got to be the pass rush in my mind, Will.
Marlon Davidson spoke with Andy and Randy yesterday on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and one of the things that he said is that he believes he's destined to be a great player inside the National Football League.
Well, you know, as I was telling everybody, you know, man, they pulled me out the wound, I knew I was destined for greatness. You know, like, man, I'm 100% Marlon Davidson. I'm 100% Cynthia Carter boy, Marlon Davidson boy. I'm the best. I'm going to continue to be the best. And I mean, Jason, whenever you see Marlon Davidson come up in the spot, man, there's no he's one of those type of guys. There's no he coming here to wreak havoc.
I agree with you, Thomas. I think that if there's one player I think that's destined to have the best career as a Falcon and maybe the best career as a professional, it's Marlon Davidson, because I think he has all the tools and he has the guys around him on that defensive line where he's going to be able to go free. And I also think this also kind of lights a fire under the behind of Tack McKinley. Not only the addition of Dante Fowler, but also the addition of Marlon Davidson. It could be a scenario where Davidson might be edging Tack for playing time if it is true that he can maybe bump outside and play a little bit more on the edge outside of Grady Jarrett. And because of that, I think that this will be something that not only benefits Marlon being in the situation that he's in, but it benefits the entire whole, because you're going to have a much more motivated Tack McKinley coming off that offseason surgery.
Let's get some sacks, right? How about some sacks for Atlanta Falcons? Let's get Tom Brady on the ground. Let's get Drew Brees on the ground. I think they're going to be able to do it at least a lot more than they did last year. Vic Beasley's not there, baby. It's a different front four.
It is. And you know, that's kind of part of the reason why I think they went away from guys like Epineza and Kalavon Chaisson. I know Chaisson was the guy who I had in the Pro Football Focus NFL mock draft only because it seemed like they were so locked in to trying to get an edge rusher even after the Dante Fowler signing. I think we look more and more about the way that they handled their business during the opening round of the draft. That was never really a part of that. And the one comment that rings true to me, and I think that it really played itself out, especially over the first round, is that the mock drafts that came out before the NFL draft was held on Thursday, there was a variance between those and what actually happened in reality. There was more variance there than had been in any NFL draft of recent memory, just because of the different nature of this draft. The predictions did not match up with where people thought things were going to end up happening, and things ended up eventually happening with the NFL draft this season. So we've talked a lot about the early picks. We've talked a lot also about the one fourth-round pick, Jalen Hawkins. We're going to get inside fourth-round pick linebacker Michael Walker, his position coach, who now is at Memphis, the linebacker coach Bert Watts, who was the D coordinator at Fresno State and coached him as a position coach at Fresno State. He joins us next. Willie P. Thomas Mott here with you as our NFL draft coverage continues. Brought to you by Twin Peaks, your home of the 2020 NFL season. On your home of the Falcons, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and Radio.com.
The draft is over, and Will and Thomas have a look back.
On Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, 92.9TheGame.com. Live and local here inside the Kia Studios. Thomas Mott, Will Pelagic. We're cruising through hour number three here on the final draft recap show on a Sunday. And Will, it's time to go out to the waitfor.com hotline and bring in Bert Watts, the linebacker coach at Memphis and also the former defensive coordinator at Fresno State, of course, who coached Michael Walker, our new linebacker fourth round pick here in Atlanta. Coach, how you doing here on a Sunday?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Let's go ahead and start with just who Michael Walker is, obviously, from your perspective. You're the one who coached him up close and personal. A lot of Falcon fans, I think, you know, get to these fourth, fifth, sixth round draft picks. You don't watch a lot of film on them. You don't watch a lot of Fresno State games down here in Atlanta. What are the Falcons getting here at linebacker?
Well, the one thing that always stood out about Michael is he's been an impact player, you know, since day one of his college career. And he's a guy that he hasn't had the easy path to success. You know, he started at a Division II school, Azusa Pacific, and was a great player there. And then decided that, you know, he wanted to follow his father's footsteps and come to Fresno State and play football with us. And as soon as he got with us, you know, and got on the field, the same thing showed up. I mean, TFLs, sacks. All those big time plays that you need to help you win games, interceptions. That's what he's showed up with. You know, every time he's on the field, you know he's gonna help you.
Coach, I know that, you know, when you get a transfer of that nature, it's kind of a crapshoot. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. What are the traits about Michael and kind of others where it does work? What needs to happen in that scenario in order for a player, especially one that goes up a level, for him to have the kind of success where he becomes an NFL draft pick?
Well, you definitely have to check your ego. And I think that's something that Michael did an amazing job of. And it really helped lead him to his success in the sense of, you know, he was a superstar at the Pacific where he came from. You know, he was the big man on campus. He was the guy that was all conference and all that. And he had to come in and redshirt and be a player to go on, you know, your scout team and help give a great defensive look for that entire season. And for anybody who's as competitive as Michael is, that's tough. That's hard. You know, you want to be out there helping your team, but he understood that. And you know, it didn't take much to talk to him about where his role was going to be that year. He owned it and won the scout team player of the year award, did an amazing job for us. And so from day one, he brought that hard work to practice with us, where, you know, he wasn't worried about, you know, who he was and that kind of stuff. He was going to work hard every single day. And I think that had a huge impact on his ability to come in and help us.
Coach, it feels like every single player coming out of high school, joining a college program, has something they need to work on. Now, they have a lot of different holes in their game. And obviously, whenever they get to the college level, the coaches try and get them as prepared for the NFL as possible. What was the biggest improvement you saw in Michael Walker's game from the day one, the first day that you got him on the football field, to the final day that you had him while you were there at Fresno State?
I think his understanding of the game. You know, he had played in, you know, come from high school and then played in a certain defense in Azusa Pacific that was a little bit more designed. There's a flex defense, which is, you know, when you play the flex, you play the flex, and there's not a whole lot of other stuff that you're doing out of that. And so when he came to us, that's where, you know, we did our best to help him understand, you know, the type of defenses that are out there and the differences and what best to help him to understand kind of where his role fit in the defense that we play. We did a lot of different defense, so it gave him an opportunity to do a lot of different things. And he was a guy that was so versatile for us that we were able to put him as an inside backer, put him as an outside backer, play him at defensive end in a rush position, and do so many things with him that whenever you can do that with a young player like Michael, you know, they just can absorb so much football knowledge that's going to help them in the future.
Yeah, we're getting a lot more of that that read here, Coach, when it seems like a lot of these Falcons players that we got breed versatility, and I think the versatility that Michael shows was certainly a trait. How do you think his game best translates to the league? Do you think he translates to somebody who can kind of play that outside linebacker role? How is his coverage ability and also his rushing ability? Because it seems like they can use him in a lot of different ways once he gets on the field.
Absolutely. I think one of his great strengths is his feel of space around him, of routes as an outside backer coming at him, what kind of things he's going to face, you know, understanding how to help the corners around him or safeties around him in coverage and be able to drop underneath and do those things that he'll need to do as an outside guy. He's got a great feel for that and really helped our guys a ton. I think pass rush wise, he's just at the tip of his potential. I really do think, you know, once he's able to do it full time as a job and no longer be a student athlete, but just be a pro athlete, he's going to be able to develop a lot as a pass rusher and really become a big time guy there.
Talking to Bert Watts right now, current linebacker coach at Memphis, and the former defensive coordinator at Fresno State when the new Falcon, Michael Walker, played linebacker there for his for the end of his college career. You just mentioned he's going to have a lot more time to just be a pro, right? There's no more studying. There's no more tests. There's no more of the college aspect going into his prep work for these kind of games. How much does that actually help in terms of, you know, these guys have tests, these guys have maybe college girlfriends, they have, you know, college events to go to. How much of a leap can a college player make just having to put all of the studying behind them and actually just get inside an NFL locker room and the game becomes what they study 24/7?
Well, I think it depends, you know, on the type of player they are and what kind of student they are. You know, I think what shows up a lot with guys that take care of their business in the classroom, you know, in college, is that when they get to the NFL and they know how to be a student, they know how to study, they know how to dissect things in a cerebral manner, that those guys are the ones that have that success, because you have to do that at that level. It's so competitive, and, you know, For a guy like Michael that is that type of guy, that is going to put in that work, is going to, you know, make the effort every single day and treat it, you know, like his job, which it is now, you know, that's where you can see a lot of improvement.
Talking, of course, with Bert Watts, the linebackers coach at Memphis, and as Thomas mentioned, the former defensive coordinator at Fresno State. And that's kind of where I want to center on here next, Coach, because I know when you have a staff kind of break up, I know your old boss retired due to health reasons, and we hope Coach Tedford's doing okay. But when that happens, how much difficult does that make it for you guys who obviously want to see your guys get drafted, but it kind of takes the game of telephone and makes it a little bit harder for the NFL teams? What, if anything, were you able to tell the Falcons, if they did reach out to you, about Walker's game and what he could bring in the league?
Well, the one thing that I told them and any other teams that reached out to me was, you're going to get a player that is one of the hardest working guys I've ever seen. I mean, he's the type of mentality that it doesn't matter if it's practice, scrimmage, game, he works as hard as he possibly can. And he does that in that sense every single day. And I never saw, you know, there were times where he'd be out there taking rep after rep after rep, and he'd just keep going, and he might take a second, go, Coach, I've been out here for like 20 reps, maybe could I get one off, you know, but and not in a complaining manner, but in a manner like, you know, I probably need a rest, because you kind of forget about him, because he's that type of a young man, and his work ethic is something that I think is really going to help the Falcons.
Coach, obviously the current state of the country and the state of the world with coronavirus makes things very interesting going forward with the football season, especially for college programs with all the off-season stuff, with the summer programs and the camps that they have going on. Your near future outlook right now, obviously there with the linebacker coach at Memphis, is what? I mean, are you guys just doing a lot of virtual stuff, a lot of Zoom meetings, kind of hoping players practice on their own until they are able to get back in front of you guys and the coaches there?
Yes, we're doing Zoom meetings as much as possible with our young men to make sure that obviously they're staying up on their academics and their workouts, but more importantly, to get them introduced to our defense and get them going there, because we are a new defensive staff and it is new to them. Our guys have been great and have done a nice job. You know, the nice thing is now there's so much online between, you know, our video system that they can watch. We can track how much they watch. We can see what they watched, what they didn't watch, and get a good sense of where they're at and even, you know, quiz them and find out their knowledge that way. So we're just having to find different ways of doing it, but it's the same stuff that we would normally do. Obviously, we'd love to be with them in person and be able to practice and do those things that we know is the next step. But we're going to keep doing as much as we can while we can.
Coach, listen, I appreciate you coming on here in Atlanta. We're excited about your guy, Michael Walker. Hope he does well for the Falcons, and also good luck to you, not only with the offseason and all the stuff you're dealing with, but with Memphis this year. Best of luck.
All right, great. Thanks again.
Yes, sir. He is Bert Walker, the linebacker coach. Sorry, Bert Watts, the linebacker coach at Memphis right now, and the former defensive coordinator for Fresno State, who was where Michael Walker played, the newest Falcon in the fourth round, Will.
And one other thing, too, I think that has to be there's two things I want to focus on here. One, I think you have to count Hayden Hurst as part of this draft class just because draft capital led to him being a Falcon. So I think you take him as part of that draft class. And when you add him in and also put in also the punter, Sterling Hoffrichter, which, again, I know we haven't spent a lot of time on him just because it's very, very hard to analyze, you know, like for like what a kicker or a punter is going to do in the league, especially one that's drafted. But he's somebody who, when I saw him at Syracuse, you know, he's very adept at kicking in a dome. He averages 43 yards a punt, a very great coffin corner punter, also handled kickoffs for the Orange when inside the Carrier Dome. I think he's somebody who is going to compete with Ryan Allen for the starting job. And I also think that, you know, it's a phase of the game. I know sometimes when people say, you have a special teams lean with certain guys. I know that was kind of the lean, too, with the two fourth rounders. You think that those guys can be both special teams guys. It's an important phase of the game, and it's one that, quite honestly, the Falcons haven't done very, very well in over recent years. I know they had a kickoff return for touchdown with Kenyon Barner last year, but over the last couple of years prior to this one, it hasn't been a phase of the football game that's looked rather appealing right now for the Falcons.
He's also got a great name, too, right? I mean, if you want to go ahead and grade a punter the best that we can here, because like you said, we don't really, you know, grade punters. And most teams, it's got to be interesting what the scouting department does for, all right, go scout this punter for me there, Jim. Let me know how the Syracuse punter is. But, hey, you know, I mean, to me, it's just another position you got to make sure you improve, because you flip the field with good punts, you pin people deep, and maybe that new Marlon Davidson but a part of the front four for the Atlanta Falcons can pin those ears back and get a lot more sacks this year.
Here is Sterling Hoffrichter, who spoke to the media yesterday via conference call on a potential competition with Allen if it happens in training camp.
Yeah, I've always loved competition growing up. I felt like it's always kind of made me like a better punter. And I mean, you're always going to have competition in the NFL. You're always going to have to be one of the top guys to kind of stay there. So I'm definitely excited for that. And then I've kind of always been competing at Syracuse, just trying to be better than kind of I was the day before. I kind of always try to compete against myself more than others, because I feel like I'm a little different than everyone else. So I try to just improve every day. But I mean, I've had some competition at Syracuse, and like my freshman year, I had Riley Dixon as the starting punter, who is the punter for the Giants right now. So definitely been taught quite a bit from that.
And not only that, but I mean, it's not like the Falcons were 100% set at that position. They had actually released one of their punters yesterday, Sam Irwin Hill, right before the draft. So that kind of tipped their hand a bit that they were looking at possibly filling that slot. And this is a team last year, Tommy, that had five different punters because of injury and ineffectiveness.
One dome to another, the Carrier Dome down in Syracuse over here to what I think we'd all say is a better dome at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Hopefully the punts are long and high, as they say in the punter world.
There's no comparison
not even
between
close.
The Carrier Dome and Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
All right, well, listen, we'll take a quick break, come back here in about 6 minutes. There is a good comparison between the amount of Georgia players that were taken, not just UGA. We're talking Georgia Southern, Georgia Tech. A lot of Georgia players were taken in the NFL draft. We'll break those all down, of course, including Jacob Eason and Jake Fromm. That's next. Thomas Mott, Will Pelagic rolling through hour number three. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and 92thegame.com.
Back with more of our look back at the 2020 NFL Draft.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Hey, little Walter.
Hey, little Walter.
Hey, little Walter. Listen, hey, little Walter.
Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, 92thegame.com.
I was letting it breathe, Thomas.
Well, listen,
I was letting it breathe.
I thought I was supposed to come back, and I realized it was you, and then you didn't say anything, so I came back.
I was letting it breathe. You got to let the great Tony breathe.
I guess that's my problem. I didn't know who Tony is. That's my problem.
Well, the reason why I picked this song is because our pal Barrett got at us on Twitter. We were talking about bad roommates. This was the debut for the great comedian Sinbad. He played the drug dealer roommate in the music video of this song, Little Walter, by the great 80s and 90s R&B soul group Tony. See, every time you and I get together, I have to impart some kind of wisdom and some type of education for you on things that you might have missed.
Well, listen,
like Tony.
This is just how radio works in the COVID-19 days. I can't see you, so all those verbal cues are impossible to then find. So I'm going, all right, we had a little dead air, and I don't know who Tony is. They sound good, though, right? I don't know.
I'm telling you, man, this is the thing. This is the thing. They were the thing for a while.
Okay. Way before I was born, but that's fine.
It's okay. It's all good. We were going to get into some of the picks of collegiate significance inside the Peach State. A lot of Georgia Bulldog stuff happening over the course of the last 3 days. We, of course, know what happened early on. We saw Andrew Thomas go to the New York Giants at number 4 overall. Regardless of what you might think about the Giants organization and where they're headed right now, you might think that Dave Gettleman is a head case, but it would have been franchise malpractice for them to go anywhere other than offensive tackle. I know when I was talking the other night with Jarvis Davis on our first round recap coverage, I was a little surprised about Andrew Thomas going there, not because I didn't think that Andrew Thomas didn't have the ability to be the first tackle off the board. It's just I didn't see a lot of places that had him there. I saw, you know, Mekhi Becton and Dedrick Wills and Tristan Wirfs. I saw any number of those three guys going to the Giants. I didn't realize the Giants were as in love with Thomas as they were, but I think he's set up for success at a place that loves offensive linemen historically with the New York Giants.
I still was more of a Wirfs fan in terms of the best offensive tackle taken, and I was a little surprised that Thomas was the first one going out there to New York. But he set up for success. You mentioned the Giants might not be an organization that you feel real good about going forward, but Daniel Jones looked good for his rookie year. Saquon Barkley probably is the best running back in the entire NFL, although you got Derrick Henry and Zeke Elliott.
Derrick Henry would like a word.
I know, but I think Saquon eventually is going to become one of the best running backs in the entire National Football League. I think what's crazy overall is you think about players who played in college inside the state of Georgia, there were 26 players with ties to just Georgia high schools who were taken, and a bunch of them were taken in the first round. Like, we forget that Derrick Brown, although he played at Auburn, went to Lanier High School here in Georgia. A.J. Terrell, obviously, was at Westlake, and then Isaiah Wilson, who played at Georgia, also played in Georgia high school. So 26 overall players were taken through all 7 rounds of the NFL draft, at least played at some point in a Georgia high school.
And you mentioned the Derrick Henry earlier. That's where Isaiah Wilson's going to be with the Tennessee Titans. You add that piece to an offensive line that already has a big one in Taylor Lewan, I should say, and you know, Ben Jones, the center from Houston there, also Nate Davis, Roger Saffold on that line. That is going to be very interesting. If that's the last thing they needed. The last thing that Tennessee Titan team needed was a better offensive line, because they made Derrick Henry look awful good last year.
DeAndre Swift goes in the second round, number 35 overall, to the Detroit Lions. So he will join former Bulldog Matt Stafford there as, I guess, the new face of the Lions running game. I don't know about the fit. I think, honestly, if you really were to ask DeAndre Swift, he would rather go somewhere else besides the Detroit Lions, who have been kind of towards the bottom of the NFC North for the majority of the past couple of years. He wouldn't be too thrilled about it. But still, Matt Patricia, you know, he's trying to be the Belichick lesser, I guess. It's not a bad situation if you're trying to go ahead and grow the organization. And you put him on a team that has some decent wide receivers and Kenny Golladay on the outside. They still have Matt Stafford. And maybe Swift can get things going there in Detroit.
And I think, too, you know, they already have a running back there in Kerryon Johnson. I think it's good for Swift to go to a place where he doesn't necessarily have to be the bell cow. He can be somebody who's uses a changeup back at the start and then grow and mature into that role. Not that I don't think he's capable, but I think anytime you try to festoon any type of incredible responsibility on a rookie running back, it usually fails to impress because that jump, I think, you know, I think the one thing that we see about running backs is that they don't really get the sense of how much the speed changes level to level from college to the pros. The things that you might have been able to do in, you know, SEC non-conference games or games against lesser opponents, there are no lesser opponents in the National Football League. These linebackers are freakishly fast. The defensive linemen, like we saw with, you know, some of the guys that were taken in this draft, these are the best of the best. So I think that that's the one thing where if you have DeAndre Swift going into a situation, I think it's good that there's already an established back there and also one with Johnson that has had some trouble staying on the football field. So I think it's not the worst thing in the world that he goes to Detroit, despite the fact that franchise is star-crossed, as you know.
Well, I thought he was going to be the first running back taken overall, and really, you make the argument, was the first running back taken out of the big three. It was just Kansas City and Andy Reid reaching a little bit for a running back that fits their mold better, who was taken in the first round a little bit earlier than DeAndre Swift and LSU's Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You can kind of think Andy Reid, back to his Philadelphia years, drafted LeSean McCoy. He drafted Brian Westbrook. I mean, that Edwards-Helaire is the perfect fit for his sort of offense, but besides that pick, I mean, Swift went first and then Taylor, and then you got to wait a while until way down in the middle of the second round, 55 overall for J.K. Dobbins. So I guess it further cemented that Jonathan Taylor was, in fact, the best running back in this class, at least according to the majority of NFL teams.
The Miami Dolphins get Solomon Kinley. That's one where I think he goes into a scenario where they also signed Eric Flowers during the offseason, somebody who, of course, was in Washington, and before that, the New York Giants. This is his third team. He's kind of a player similar to Dante Fowler, is Flowers, in the fact that he didn't necessarily shine in his first team, went to another place, and got himself a big deal in the offseason, and now, of course, going to be playing with that brand-new quarterback in Tua Tagovailoa, so getting some more help up front in a draft for the Dolphins that was very, very stout and got a lot of volume players, and Kinley is chief among them. I think he went a little bit later than I expected. I thought maybe somebody might try to go up there and snatch him in the third round. I think that even the Falcons might have even taken a look at him just because of the fact that they needed a guard position. They ended up getting Matt Hennessy instead, the third-round pick out of Temple. But Kinley goes to the Dolphins, and I think that's one where you look at them and they say they got value there.
The big conversation, obviously, here, not just in Atlanta, but in the state of Georgia, is where do the quarterbacks go? Jacob Eason, and Jake Fromm, two former Dog quarterbacks, both go in similar rounds. You had Eason a little earlier in the fourth round. Fromm goes in the fifth round to the Buffalo Bills. I think it's very clear if you had to pick which one is going to play sooner rather than later. You got established starter in Josh Allen now in his third year up there in Buffalo, and the Bills are very excited for him. I mean, 10 wins. And then I guess you got Jake Fromm there being the backup. But Eason sitting not only behind Rivers, but behind the age of Rivers, I think sets him up to probably be the future quarterback number one first choice for the Colts up there, and he's got a great offensive-minded head coach in Frank Reich. Is if Eason can kind of get the rawness out of there, he has the size and the arm talent and the strength. If he can study for 1, 2, 3 years, I think you go former Dog quarterback Jacob Eason as the pick there to be the face of the Colts.
And the other part that I find interesting about Eason's fit, and this was something that our colleague Randy McMichael, who knows Philip from his time back when they were both in San Diego together, Philip is not the kind of guy who's going to want to play, you know, the mentor game. He wants to kind of take care of him. So I think it's good that he goes to a place with a head coach that's a former quarterback that he can lean on, because you know he isn't going to get any kind of mentoring from Philip Rivers. Phil's going to worry about him and all them kids he has to raise.
It's just a matter. The real question is for him, though, is how much longer does Philip Rivers have? It's the same Tom Brady effect. You think Brady and Rivers, we've seen them basically my entire adult life, and they've always been starting quarterbacks in the league. But the reality is this could be Rivers' final year. I mean, he only signed, what, a two-year deal there, so they're hoping that he has a first year and then comes back for one more. This really feels like this is going to be the quarterback of the future, and that's why they spent a fourth-round draft pick on him.
They did, and I think, you know, I think we don't believe that either Brady or Rivers play beyond the 2021 season.
I don't think so either, no.
I think both those guys are done after that point. I even think that maybe even during the 21 season, if the Colts find it in their best interest to maybe speed up the future if they feel that Eason is ready. And I kind of with you on Fromm, we talked about this a little bit earlier. I think two things can be true. It can be the right decision for Jake Fromm to have left early, and it also could have been a situation where he's just not an NFL starting quarterback projected. Like, he's just not. And I think that there's nothing that could have happened with him going back to Georgia that would have changed the way people perceive him unless he had the kind of season he had in his freshman year. And I don't think that, number one, Georgia wants to play that way. Number two, they have the receiver base. Even though the receiver base this year is going to be better than last year, I don't think it's better than what he had his freshman year when you had guys like Mecole Hardman running all up and down the field at Sanford Stadium. It wasn't structured to be that way. I think the best decision for him was to try and go get his money, take a shot to be in a situation where he could possibly benefit, but it just didn't work out for him in the way that I think he wanted it to.
Can I just say that thank goodness the Falcons did not draft Jake Fromm? Can you imagine what we have to deal with here in the air? Well, the Falcons had drafted Jake Fromm.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, and I think there's a desire for a lot of NFL fans who are fans of the college game to see players from the colleges they root for here locally end up with the Falcons. You have to be 100% sure and darn sure, because if you're in a situation like the Falcons where you have multiple college programs of major import, you know, you have a lot of Dog fans, you have a lot of Georgia State fans, you have Tech fans. And if you take somebody from one of those schools, it better be a hit. I think there's extra pressure on them to succeed. And if they don't succeed, that's a black eye when it comes to the relations. I think that's part of the reason why they didn't take Rodrigo Blankenship, and also could have been the reason why, you know, a team like the Panthers passes on Isaiah Simmons, because there's a big Clemson contingent in the city of Charlotte, and I think, you know, there have been a lot of Carolina Panther fans who basically have ire towards that franchise because they're also Clemson or South Carolina fans, and that franchise historically has not looked at those types of players in the draft. And I think the same thing can be said for the way the Falcons do their business. They're not going to take a dog unless he's established or a can't miss kind of guy.
I just hear it now. I mean, last year I hosted the Falcon Flyover, the Falcon postgame show, where we took a lot of phone calls and people were reacting to Falcons losing. I mean, imagine if they drafted Jake Fromm. I can hear the first phone call. Falcons lose week one by 7. And Matt Ryan throws one bad interception. There would have been someone on the phone line saying, "Tommy, we got that Jake Fromm. That guy's a winner. We should probably put him in." I didn't want to deal with that. Thank you, Falcons, for steering away from Jake Fromm. I greatly appreciate you.
Charlie Werner goes in the 6th round of the Niners. Tate Crowder ends up being Mr. Irrelevant. He was picked number 255 overall for the New York Giants. Georgia Southern had a pair of players. Kendall Vildor goes as cornerback to the Chicago Bears in the 5th round. The kicker, Tyler Bass, to the Buffalo Bills in round number 6. And Georgia Tech did also have a pick as well in the NFL draft. The tight end Tyler Davis, the South Carolina high school product, goes from Georgia Tech to Jacksonville with pick number 27 of the 6th round. We'll get back into the Falcons draft. Also look at some of the undrafted free agent signings. We don't have the official list yet from the Falcons, but we do have some of the new names that are being bandied about when it comes to the players that they signed after the draft was over. And also, if you missed the conversation Andy and Randy had with Marlon Davidson, we'll hear of that again a half hour from now with a radio replay. Also, would love to hear from you. 404-741-0929 on the phones and the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Willie P, Thomas Mott coming back one more hour here with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, our NFL draft coverage presented by Twin Peaks, your home of the 2020 NFL season.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.